Dear Dhamma friends, today as our 10th day in our retreat, we are going to take now time for the today's Dhamma talk. May everyone give the consent with three times, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ඉමේ චත්තාරෝ ආහාරා තණ්හා නිදාන තණ්හා සමුදයෝ තණ්හා ජාතිකා තණ්හා පබවාති ති Dear Dhamma friends, in this particular sutta, namely the Tanna Sankhya Sutta, the Buddha is showing the chain action one by one and working backward and indicate that the five aggregates rising as these four nutriments as the proximate cause, and these for all the four nutriments as its as a source, the desire. Oh, it is origin is from desire. It's born out of desire and produced from desire. So therefore now all the four nutriments have the one common character. They are diversified in terms of physical nutriments. The touch or contact as the second, and the mental formation or volition as the third one, and the consciousness as the fourth one, but they have the very same common character, that is tanha. So that is why the Buddha says that the single cause, whenever he is indicating for this the suffering or for the arising of this suffering or arising of these five aggregates, the tanha, the desire, as the single cause. So yesterday we tried to understand how, what is the relationship, we can understand, we can trace, we can deduce the physical foods and the desire and the contact, to, the relationship with the contact and the desire. I think that with the available worldly knowledge or common understanding, one can understand or prove there is a relationship between the physical food and the desire and the type of contact each one is trying to get in terms of visual objects, sounds, smells, tastes and tactile sensation. And that is also governed by, monitored by tanha. But now if we are to go into the mano-sanchetana, that is to say volitional activities or mental formations are due to tanha, one may find it is rather difficult to understand or digest or to justify when compared with the early two. So that is why the Buddha, starting from the most obvious one, is slowly, slowly tracing down to the each and every volitional activity, each and every mental formation is based upon tanha. So understanding this very thing may be much difficult in a country like this, where the consumerization and luxurious life and that kind of thing become the national policy. Under such circumstances, it will be very difficult for someone to understand in the first place, and the second thing is to convince someone others each and every mental action, each and every volitional activity, each and every productivity, each and every creativity is coming the tanha as the base. The most sarcastic thing the Buddha mentioned is the whenever someone is talking about the worldly development, it is nothing but you are developing number of tombs in the cemetery. That is the ultimate development. So if you know it, you have to understand each and every development, each and every creativity, each and every novelty is propelled by the desire. So that is working against the grain. Specifically young children, if you are going to teach them each and every creativity, each and every motivation, each and every determination is coming out of desire, and you must try to do away the desire, they will never learn. They will never come out with the productive ideas. They never think about something new. So when you are going to this third nutriments, there should have a certain amount of maturity, a certain amount of experience of the bad side of this samsara, the perpetuation of suffering, and life experience, and to understand, even though each of us is trying and chasing behind the carrot, and throughout it is happening, that was our parents and grandparents and grand-grandparents, but no one died in a contented way. No one died in a saturated, satisfactory way, but still we are doing the same. So therefore, how to find the relationship, and are we also to do the same mistake and ultimately regret at the deathbed, or what is the way out? So to have that kind of mindset, have to have that kind of approach or that kind of analysis of the question, the Buddha says he or she must be at least at the 40s. Whenever the Buddha explain about the life cycle, of course it is a kind of a compilation according to the teaching of the Buddha. If someone is going to have 100 years, the first 10 years is called Uttana Dasaka. That means you are lying on your back for the first 10 years. Second 10 years is the playful time. The third one is the makeup time. You do makeup and all the thinking about the beauty of yourself. And the fourth one, onward only the maturity happens in your mental faculty. And the 40s onward only you are born into the psychological world. Till that, you are not up to the mark of the psychology to understand what is happening. But this is the natural story, the normal standard. But even during the time of the Buddha, there were enlightened, very young, male, female, ordained, unordained, both. They are exceptional cases. Otherwise, one has to go into the Jnana Dasaka. Jnana Dasaka means the maturity with your age. Till that, according to the normal way of life, very difficult someone to understand that creative ideas and this volitional activity, the will, the determination is coming out of tanha, and tanha is ultimately going to give suffering or frustration or tension. So therefore should have a certain amount of background knowledge, and based upon that one can draw a line to say, as far as you are contemplating on the relationship with the food and the material food, physical food with the tanha, fairly you can do with your normal common sense. You can understand each and every sensuous impeachment, how much you are chasing behind it, and whenever you are about to get it, once you get it, got it, you are very happy that the touch contact is being satisfied and your desire is being appeased. But when and where someone to understand each and every motivation, each and every will, each and every determination, it is not easy. with the normal knowledge. So therefore it says, whenever someone is practicing Samatha Bhavana, starting with Samatha and going to get Cheto Vimutti, the understanding of the relationship between the physical food and the contact with the tanha, the desire, is the tool. If someone wishes to understand the truth with the Panya Vimutti, the wisdom way, they are more approaching to the latter two, that is how each and every desire, each and every motivation, each and every creativity, each and every makeup, each and every mental formation creating the coming out of tanha. So therefore it is a kind of food of thoughts for the vipassana yogis or wisdom based people. And the least, or I would say most subtlest thing is to understand this consciousness is, very consciousness is always associating tanha, tanha going to give the base for the consciousness. Consciousness in return try to keep as long as possible tanha intact. So therefore each and every moment we are conscious, knowingly or unknowingly, we are fertilizing. They have the mutual relationship with the desire and the desire in return to the consciousness. These two are very difficult someone to understand unless otherwise they have my vocabulary radical reflection. And one must have an understanding against the grain. So this is indicated according to the teaching of the Buddha as the Yoniso Manasikara. Yoniso Manasikara is normally translated as wise reflection. But when Jnanananda, he put it is a radical reflection because otherwise general tendency is to facilitate and be happy and promote your own creative thinking and promote your own creativity, productivity, motivation, determination, everything. But Buddha, from the one point of view, theoretically he says, whatever it is, if it is coming under chetana, volition, it is nothing but the desire is the underlying current. Whenever the consciousness is working, that means not in a vigilant way, not in a diligent way, not in a mindful way, that consciousness is naturally associating tanha. To understand that, it is very difficult in the linear relationship, very difficult in the normal deductive way, inferential way, unless you are, otherwise you have this radical reflection, kind of against the grain kind of reflection. So therefore, this part has a panya vimutti, that means liberation through wisdom, kind of address. People, those who have the quick wit, those people have this radical reflection, will be very happy and to thank Buddha for his discovery, as to say, each and every creation is leading to suffering. So then we will say this is just for an introduction and giving the background information. Then if someone is managed, we will say someone managed to understand that each and every sanchetana or sankhara, both are them using as synonyms, is based on desire, and in return, when and where they achieve, they give back the nutriment for the desire. They are working in a reciprocal way. And if it is truth, for example, what is the way out? And what is the practical value of this understanding? And how can we incorporate that into our life? For that, the Buddha come out with the word Appannaka Patipada. Appannaka Patipada means a non-reactional way. When and where we wish to do some adjustments, when and where we need some kind of improvements, we need makeup, we need some kind of a manipulation if we are not happy with the present combination. Then any manipulation, any makeup, any productivity is a reaction to the what is provided. So if you are ready enough, if you are vigilant enough, if you are diligent enough, if you are mindful enough to see as and when the phenomena arises, if our aim is to see things as they are, there is no chance for reaction to arise. There is no chance for assuming to arise. You have to understand phenomena arises due to its own due cause, and whenever the cause ceases to exist, phenomena ceases to exist. So then why should I develop kind of attention? Why should I develop any allergic to this situation? Out of this tension only the creativity happens, the determination happens, adjustments happen, makeup happens. So way out is a development of this unassuming quality, non-reactional quality. So this has been, according to the teaching of the Buddha, one way he presents this as Aparnaka Pratipada's way, kind of a way that you are dealing with each and every given moment, so that you try your best to not to get committed with your volitional activities. Other one is, Buddha says, the Atammayata. Atammayata also one word, hardly given any tangible translation. And Atammayata means you are going to, when and where something happened, go, you are going to assume it is as my or me or myself. Then only your participation, your commitment, your creativity, your adjustment going to happen. As and when it happens, if you know the art of disclaiming, yes, it is unjust, it is painful, it is not what I like, but this what happened in this given context, it is not me, it is not mine, it is not myself. So these are the two tactics in a vipassana way, one can cut off, get the shin of this connection. And that is not by cutting the desire, but by wisdom, you can cut off the connection. So there are two methods. One thing is by cutting off the desire. Other thing is by cutting through wisdom. And when and where this wisdom going to work, it is quick and electric. When and where you are going to do with the desire, it is slowly, one after the other, slow manner it happens. So therefore, some people take a lot of time in order to get rid of the desire by restraining one's own physical foods, by restraining one's own contacts, slowly, slowly. So it is also gathering the momentum. But some people, maybe they are due to past merits, they are exposed to the Dhamma, they quickly come in, no, yes, so far I was getting involved with the arising phenomena, with the experience, when and where it happens, I try to adjust it, I try to assume it, I try to claim it as me, mine and self. Instead, in order not to get committed with the arising phenomena, if I can do away with that kind of assuming, reaction, or getting involved, he or she is having the quick bit, immediately can get the result, and not only that, understand in the next moment what must be my attitude to the arising phenomena. So that happens in a very quick way. It happened in an electric way. So therefore, two kinds of approaches. Even though it is come under the same subject of food, early to giving away gradual and by getting rid of desire. Latter to also have some kind of a same attitude, but is more addressing to your wisdom, your quick wit, and to go deep into and understand with the direct touch each and every manipulation, each and every reaction, each and every assumption is going to give some commitment. So one has to do away with. But if you are going to do away with out of belief, I doubt your progress. Of course, at the beginning you will start with the belief, but later you have to go into the deep, deep, deep layers. As I tried to explain in the early talks, you have to first start with the restraining of the physical and verbal mental activities or mental formations, and then only you can go deep into the to see undercurrent tendencies. You are the habitual dispositions, what is happening. So when and where one can understand, there is a kind of a momentum. According to that momentum, when and where the phenomena arises, knowingly or unknowingly, consciously or unconsciously, volitionally or involuntary way, we get hooked up with, we get connected with, and that we have to see. The Buddha said, Jānato bhikkhave passato āsavāna khayam vadāt. If someone knows that under the table, the hooking, the connecting happened, that is how the knot is going to get. If there is no the subsurface connection, the knot is not going to get authenticated, seconded. One very good example still Venerable Jnanananda gave, he told when we are using a sewing machine, you can see the needle thread going with the needle downward. And if you understand the mechanism, as and when the needle goes down, there is a bobbin underneath and it is putting a hook for each and every penetration. And then you can see only the needle is going up and down, and each and every time it goes, it gets hooked up from the down, and then tightening happens, the stitching happens. Imagine there are no threads in the bobbin. The needle goes, it appears like stitching, but it is not stitching. Because that no thread in the needle. Arahant is a machine without thread in the bobbin. We are so keen to fill immediately after when it is finished. We try our best to keep the bobbin always filled. That is what we do by creation. Creativity, and by getting hooked up with telling this is me, this is mine, this is myself. So these kind of examples indicate even the suggestion come, just like thread going down with the needle, if there is no seconding going to happen, if there is no appreciation of the same thing going to happen, the needle goes down but never stitching takes place. Exactly the way when and where you mature in your mindfulness, you are developing your vigilance, you are developing your diligence in a choiceless manner. Look at it, but never get committed and say very same thing Buddha mentioned. Even though you see with an eye person, behave like a blind. You see everything, but your response, your attitude must be how much you can behave like a blind. And if you are with a fully ear, with person with the fully ears intact, every sound you can very lucidly listen, but even someone is blackguarding you, blaming you, reprimanding you, you must give the deaf eye ear. And behave like a person who didn't hear. Even someone is going to praise you. Praising is always exaggerated. You have to listen it. Of course, you are fully there, fully vigilant, fully diligent, fully mindful. But your reaction or your response must be just like a deaf. And you are getting good smells or bad smells. You are getting good taste or bad taste. You are getting a good comfortable contact and bad comfortable contact, uncomfortable contact. For each and everything, you are fully vigilant. but you behave like a paralytic, paralyzed person. They are coming, but there is no reaction. So in that sense, you try your best to keep the volitional at the zero level as much as possible, or in the lowest possible level, by not reacting. So this kind of thing appear like unsocial, it appear like backward, and it appear like you are not a good cowboy, you are not a good sportsman. So therefore, to be a cowboy, who is a sportsman, we try our best to react just like a snake. And you don't know, each time you hit, you get hooked up. And ultimately, you get accumulate so much of good or bad karmic forces. And when it comes into fruition, you can understand where it happens. How, where I see, did put the seeds for the germination, when the flowering and the fruition going to happen, you can't see the relationship, because when you are attacking like a serpent, you are not mindful. You do it in a habitual way. Therefore, Sankara has a meaning of the habituation. It's a kind of accumulation happened through you in this life or previous life, if you are believing the birth and rebirth. It is happening, and accordingly that it have a reaction immediately happen. It is so quick. So therefore, unless otherwise you have a steadfast mindfulness, you never claim that I committed at that time. You feel like that it is something happened that you do not know. But the Buddha says there is no second person involved. And if you know mindfully, you wouldn't have. You can't do it, because mindfulness really says this is not the way, it is unbecoming. But you are unmindful, therefore it happened through your involuntary way. But even in the consequences, no mercy. You have to pay for the balance, pay the cost. So that is why the understanding towards your habitual things, or mindfulness towards your habitual thing, and your vigilance and diligence to your habitual thing, if you develop the mindfulness after the steadfast level, you can happen, you can understand how it happens. Imagine if someone, instead of your mindfulness, someone else going to note it and tell you, you will get really irritated. You will be never happy to say that why you are interrupting and interfering with my likings and disliking. Why you are talking about my habituation? It is none of your business. Don't come and deal with me. So therefore the Buddha says it is not my duty. Even if I can see, I will never come and tell you this is a habituation or this is a your liking and disliking. But the Buddha says, I will give you a mirror, polish it, look at it, and then you can see yourself till that happens. Jānato bhikkave passato āsavāna khayamada. Oh, monks, I will proclaim till you see yourself, till you feel yourself, never, no change happened in your personality. No change happened in your likings and dislikings. No change happened in your habituation. Therefore, whatever the other people going to assimilate methods and formulas and kind of thing for these bad habits, no address till that particular person understand one's own thing, not like a mistake, but as a phenomenon. Without that, whatever the external thing you are going to do with the that kind of people, the Buddha says, pouring water into the pot upside down. First of all, you have to turn the pot, and then pouring can be sustained, but otherwise it's a waste. So even then, more than, we can take the external examples, but exactly it works when and where you are ready to see your own mistakes. So therefore, total meditation is to understand or quantify your own ignorance, your own bewilderment, your own stupidity, your own darkness. And when and where it happens, you develop it is called allergic reaction. You are not happy to see your own mistake. Even if it is happening exactly in the vipassana way, you develop kind of allergic reaction. So therefore you have to have so much of faith on the Buddha. Buddha is really surface. Let your weakness to surface. And when it is surface, it is coming up, you feel nauseatic. You feel cornered. You feel outcasted. You feel as nothing. So therefore you always try to find escapism. Instead, and to understand whenever you are going to do meditation, things are coming out. So when and where comes, it is of course not a healthy or happy or easygoing situation. And understanding is the most important thing. And this very thing, I don't know how is the coincidence. Sigmund Freud mentioned in his Western psychology books, recently one person quoted, I did not really go into that detailed research, this is 1918 or 17. Sigmund Freud, when he's, and it is latter part of his life, when he's recommending this free association, he has mentioned, you have to let the patient, the psychotic patient, to speak out. That is to let her psychological wounds to surface. Talk in the, that is called free association or counseling. So you as a the therapist must listen, showing the attention, showing the diligence, but don't say what you are telling good or bad. You must not be judgmental. But you have to tell he or her that I am professionally promising you, I am not divulging anything what you are going to say, but I am listening. Please keep on talking. And till that particular sick person also do not know where the root causes lie. Only thing is, keep on doing the free association. Due to the confidence, one day it come out. Soon it come out, that is the end of it. And the point that I am going to raise is, Sigmund Freud has mentioned, you as a therapist, you must listen to it like a deaf person. Such a coincidence. Exactly the same the Buddha mentioned. When you are giving a counseling, when you are listening to free association dialogue, you must be very attentive, very vigilant, listening, but don't say good or bad. You are promoted. You are listening. Let the mind to calm down. He says, when your mind calm down only, the telepathic message is going from that his mind to your mind. Not through the rationality, not through your compassion, not through your healing capacity. The mind-to-mind communication happens when you are listening. The other party must understand he is a person with professional confidence. He will not divulge, and he also must surface it. The other person must promote it, and that is the exactly work of the mindfulness. You are the patient, you are the psychiatrist. Mindfulness is the base. Mindfulness is the medicine. So you let the mind to surface everything. You do not allow anything new. You are not putting any visual objects. You are not adding more sounds. You try your best to not do. And don't promote with smelling, talking, or eating, or tactile sensation by your active motions, and let the mind to calm down and do away with as much as possible hindrances, and then let the mind to talk. It is frothy. It is proliferating. Whatever coming out of this proliferation and frothing is not a sweet smell. It's already dirty thing, accumulated throughout. So therefore, more and more it comes, you become more and more healed. So Buddha mentioned it is very clearly, jānato bhikkave pasato āsavāna khayam vadāmyo man. As far as you see very thing under your very nose, as far as you understand under your very nose, there is no cure. Whatever the other thing is superficial. So therefore, meditator is the only person in the battlefield face to face with the enemy. If the enemy go into first, you are the person to die. If you are the person to become first, enemy going to die. No bunkers. No. Directly. So, for that, only you develop all the other spiritual qualities. So, they are the chetana, the volitional activities, determination, anything going to work negative because it disturbs color between what is arising and the observing mind. So you must try, but it is habitual, so therefore even if it happens, you must not trigger it. But what must be your attitude is, keep the mind as much as possible free from adjustments, free from makeup, free from improving, free from any kind of creative thinking. Just be like a blind person even though you have eyes. Just like a deaf person, even you have a very good ears. Behave like a person with paralytic stroke, even if you have the sensitivity. And at last, Buddha says, behave like a corpse if the situation is unbearable. Let everything happen. Let the past karma convent torture you, burn you, let your past mistake due to the penal court piece will come and torture you. Never mind, you must not add any new volitions to into that. No fabrication. Just let that happen. You see the beginning, the middle and the end as if someone else, and don't get committed. Yeah. Therefore, when Upanishadasaya, when he is teaching, he says, the yogi, the practitioner, the mendicant is, that let the phenomena happen, you try never to start a new seeds, never to plant new seeds regarding karma and karma theory. You know, things are happening due to its own natural code. It is happening due to the universal law is working. You are neutral observer. Something bad happens. Something unjust happens. You are in utter pain. You are in utter desperate, you are in utter torturing, you are in utter burning. But if it is bearable, don't ask why. See how much you can bear it up and without creating even a hateful thought. If it is an ecstatic kind of a pleasure, even then you must understand it is happening according to the cause and effect relationship. I have my status as a neutral observer. I must not be happy telling that I am the person who created. I am happy. The neighbor is not going to have it. I am the only person having life. Don't try to assume it in a positive or negative way. In that case, you are not planting new seeds. So therefore, even though you are get tortured, even though you are going to get burnt, no more new vortex, no trends, no new things are going to start. So that is what we call the forbearance. That's what we call indifference. So indifference is not to the good thing, but even to the bad thing. Not only to the bad thing, even to the good thing. So when that comes into being, it is very difficult for the people, those who are talking about restrainment with regard to the social context or disciplinarian point of view, you can't understand. Disciplinarians are usually looking at the problem with the hate. So therefore they are disciplining themselves, but they don't know they have to discipline both into the good and the bad. But the teaching of the Buddha is going surfacing, go into the deep layers, and ultimately you, when and where possible, you try your stream of consciousness as much as possible unbiased. As much as possible the choiceless, unassuming way. So you are behaving like a log. Even though you have all the capacities, you have so much of fear not to create a new trend, good or bad. So therefore religious people ask you to accumulate as much as merits. But even then you have to say, even then you are extending your suffering by accumulating so much of merit also. So merit is good in order to get rid of demerits. But merit is not ultimate. It is not it is something relative to the demerit, and when you come to the merits, when you come to the comfortable situation, try to see good and the bad, both in the equal mind. That is why the Buddha says, for the eight vicissitudes, you must develop kind of equanimity, or indifference is, I think, a wrong term, equanimity, equipoise mind, and that is go beyond spirituality, and I find it is very difficult to explain or convince, because many those who are meditating have very little belief, very little understanding about then and their understanding, or quick wit, or this radical reflection. So therefore, I don't see that radical reflection as a starting point. Starting point is the gradual development, but when and where the maturity happen, you come to know your human right, for my definition, is to not to react. I would put it in the other way, if someone come and say, in this case, in this phenomena, in this experience, you have to tell something, I will well tell him, I am not a slave of you. You can't interpret terms to me. It is my rights whether to get committed or not, because consequences are not in you. You can't force me. Any person, that is what I select this ordination. Once you become a monk, no one can come and say, you must do and you must do that. So, very nicely, Pandita Sayadaw, he says, many, even maybe you also at fault at that level. Expect or talk, say these things are good for the monk, these things are not good for the monk, and this is not suitable for monks like, but he as a monk, he says, who the one who can interpret terms to monks? Monks are suitable for anything. They are the people, because they are trying to develop the economy for the good and the bad. Therefore, if someone is telling that this is not good, not bad for the monk, that means they don't know they are the disciple of the Buddha. Buddha is the person called as Arahant. Arahant means a suitable person to anything. So, therefore, whether you like it or not, whether you do not know or not, as far as you are meditating, as far as you are developing mindfulness, as far as you are developing vipassana, you all are monks. You not maybe ordained under a teacher or wearing a white robe, yellow robe or bald headed, but as far as you are practicing, you have to understand, you have to listen to your own inner voice and try to, as much as possible, not to get committed with sankhara, not to get committed with chetana. But by your mere understanding, you can't stop it, because it is happening in a very fast speed. It is happening in a high momentum, acceleration. So you have to understand when and where something happened, how this urge comes, how this motivation comes to do something, get commit, and don't put the brake, but put the clutch, just to get distance with. Under this pressurizing situation, can you have a split second of freedom, split second of solitude, split second of peace of mind? Yeah, under such pressurable, under such a tense situation, and you can see, if you know you have this privilege, you are endowed with, you can understand, even under such a pressurized situation, you can entertain solitude, you can entertain the freedom, you can entertain the contentment, and don't expect that someone is going to give it to you, unless otherwise you fight for it, you go and live up to that. So therefore, all your meditation, all your restrainment, all your other teaching and kind of thing, when and where you are facing a unexpected situation, don't rush. Any tense mind unsuitable to draw a conclusion. Conclusion or decision is possible or valid when and where the mind is calm and quiet. And when and where the decision taken with a calm and quiet mind is durable. Whatever the decision you are taking in a rush is not durable because your mind is not absorbed enough information behind. So under each and every situation you can understand the motivation, understand the fabrications, understand the mental formations happening. So you have to, as I try to explain that day, you have to understand this motivation, this creativity, this kind of thing. Is it going to create well-being of me? That is the very question you have to ask. So therefore in Dvidha Vitakka Santana Sutta, the Buddha says, whenever such a hurried situation or tense situation happen, sometimes you may be in a running situation to, in a rush to chasing towards that situation. And all of a sudden, the self-awareness can come. If you are a meditator, of course you are doing a wrong thing in the sense you are running to the situation, but on the way, you may develop kind of a thing, why I am running in such a speed? Then the rationalization, the Buddha says, even if I am running to that situation, situation has already taken place, what is the use of my running? So you can instead go slow. And you can understand the people already ran there, and on the way back, coming back, I can meet them and I can get the message even though I am not running to the situation. And you can slow down. And while you're slowing, you can understand at all why I am going that way. Why should not I stand and wait here? And still, whenever the mindfulness is going to work, you can say, standing posture is tiring. Why should not I sit down? And you can lie down. That is the way the Buddha says, applying the clutch. Otherwise, what happens is, people are in such a rush, people are unmindful, they are not in a game to understand their own motivation, they are not in a game to understand their own adjustments and the manipulations. So therefore, if you also going to take into the same speed, telling that you have to be social and you have to be with the people, ultimately you are burning the candle from both the ends and ultimately you have to suffer a lot. So therefore this slowing down process really happens when and where you come to know your motivation. So I will give an example, don't misunderstand me. Many will misunderstand. The tomorrow or day after, definitely one or the other people will come and ask, Banti, when you are going off, where can we discuss the problem? How can we have an interviews and kind of thing? So I will give a mirror as an answer. Whenever such a question happens, write it on a paper. And see what motivation made this question. And do it in a self-critical way. And sometimes you feel you have to have a quick enlightenment. You have to be smart, and how to accelerate, that may be one of the reasons. Or maybe to explain this to some another person, there may be the question. Or to get the pleasure with the so-called positive meditative experiences, that may be the cause. So these three causes are desire, conceit and ego. If you boil down and see this question come out of either by the desire or by the conceit or by the egocentric this thing, you need not to have another meditation master. You can diagnose what is the trend. So therefore, one day, one person has asked Achandram, I don't know whether you know Achandram once, he has told how to understand Arahant. He says, Arahants have no questions. He says, he knows who the hell can answer our questions. unless otherwise you study your question. You think omnipotent, omnipresent God is there to give the answer. My duty is to raise more and more questions. God's question and responsibility is to give more and more answers. No. You must be in a position to diagnose from what source this question is coming. I am not discouraging you asking questions. That is not my motivation. But when it is happening, understand your own answer is much, much organic, much, much down to earth, back at home, rather than another person analyzing and giving a very enlightening answer. So one day you have to answer yourself. So therefore, when you are at the beginning, of course, we have to spoon feed. We have to give. But don't keep that relationship throughout as a bondage. So whenever the Krishnamurti, he is giving, he says, don't develop a relationship or bondage with the teacher. It is ultimately will be a shackle to the teacher as well as the disciple. So therefore, there is no such a thing. It is a dialogue. One has to take one's own responsibility. And when and where you go further, you never search for an answer. Instead, you analyze the question. When and where it happened, repeat it again and again. Is it a real question? If it is so, when you analyze it easily, you can understand from where it comes from. And moment you understand, it is coming out of desire. Don't get dissatisfied. Don't get ashamed. Of course, there is no good, the beautiful sight in the question. It is some kind of a defilement, some kind of a difficulty. But understand the answer in terms of desire or conceit or in the self-centered kind of way is so much you are blooming, maturing the humanity. You are giving your own due respect to your analytical mind, self-sufficiency, contentment. So this is how it goes. So when and where you develop this the bad side or appear to be good, but underneath what is happening in this motivation, you see your consciousness become unfounded. It loses its base. And therefore you feel lost-like. You feel fearful-like. You feel you lost the benchmark. And as the commentator says, whenever you are going into the sea with a small dinghy boat, soon you see the soon you ceases to see the dry land that is about 5 miles away from the seashore. You start to see everywhere is the sea and the glaring light, and ultimately you develop seasickness. So likewise, whenever you see, go a little bit away from your normal familiar signs, familiar signals and objects, you feel like lost. And it is happening exactly when you go into the thicket forest. And if you do not have a way to find out the return journey, inside the forest, you can't see left and the right, north and the south. You get lost. Exactly if you go to a desert, there also all the landmarks are gone and you feel like lost. So this is what is happened when and where the consciousness loses its ground. So when and where it happens, if you are to re-establish it, that means you are fertilizing, nourishing the suffering. So therefore, slowly, slowly you have to wean it out and ultimately understand the primordial form of the consciousness is always bright. When and where it is specialized and manifested and founded on one object only, it becomes very partial, bias. And your experience is always imbalanced. So therefore, more and more you go to the center, more and more it is good to go to the primordial form, it is glittering, the brightness of the consciousness happen, but the consciousness itself is not happy with that because it is never familiarized. It is radical. It is not conventional. So therefore it is always happy to go to the surface. As soon as it goes to the surface, it is specializing only one tiny part, forgetting about the balance of the globe. So instead, if you go to the center, you feel that that consciousness is representing everything, but it is not in your memory. You have never been before, but the Buddha says that is your real home. So what we do is, our journey as far as the consciousness is concerned, from the superficial level to the center. More and more it goes to that, it becomes unmanifested, unfounded. But more and more you go to the center, you lose your old identities. You end up with the humanity. Whether you are male or female, whether you are Buddhist or non-Buddhist, whether you are ordained or non-ordained, whatever may be, everything are just labels. As far as they are, mind is biased. All the decisions are partial. So therefore, let the mind to slowly, slowly go down there. So it is, as far as the consciousness is concerned, you are weaning it off from the superficial value to the deep layers. When more and more you go there, you find the Buddha mind. You find the Buddha nature. And that is just a natural law. It is the normal cause and effect law, and that need not any manipulation. No any steering necessary, no tension is there, no frustration is there. So you are becoming a part and parcel of the passing show, or it's well explained is the way that whenever a river go and enter into the ocean, it loses its identity. That experience is called oceanic. The oceanic feeling you, whenever you have the water, river water, go and emptying into the ocean. Likewise, if you keep little ether on a saucer, it rectify, it evaporate and go into the air. Nothing lost that you can't pinpoint, this is ether. As far as it is consolidated, as a liquid you can tell this is the ether. But when it is gone to the, evaporated to the air, it loses the space and time. So our all agony, our all suffering, all our partial nature caught up in time and space. And we can't imagine, we can't go beyond the time and space because it appears like something like lost. But the Buddha, he says the time and space is a real clear-cut indication of the bewilderment, ignorance, the darkness. Whenever the brightness arises, you find the mind made its own prison and become imprisoned. In the time and space, so as far as the society is concerned, ethical values are concerned, restrainment regarding the ethical value is concerned, you have to be with that. But you must not limit your complete spectrum to that kind of thing. So the best example the Buddha gives is, whenever someone, they become parents, they are going to have children, and children have their playhouses. They are putting up small houses and doing all the kind of thing on the play. And whenever they do it, they want, they wish their parents also come and take part in their playhouse. So when the parents are going to the playhouses, they know this is just to satisfy these children. We go there and as a visitor take part in their party. But they know the real life is not in the playhouse. So exactly when the parents go to the pay a visit to the playhouse, their behavior is just to satisfy innocent young children. Likewise, when and where you have the understanding, you go with the normal sentient beings, behave with them, understand they are just in the playhouse. But that is not the truth. That is not the whole life. There's a maturity there. So that is how, when and where this consciousness come into the primordial form, it slowly, slowly it is loses the space, it loses the time. And ultimately, as far as the perception is concerned, you are losing the signs, losing objects. That means to the rational mind, lost of everything. But the Buddha says, it is just the changing of the shape and the manner. Things are the same, just like the ether. In a saucer, you can pinpoint the place. You can tell the time where it was. But when it's evaporated, it disappears. But if nothing happened to ether. Ether is exactly there, but their agglomeration, the return, back to the tiny particles, when it happened, you can't pinpoint it. You can't attribute with the time. So that is exactly happened in the rectification. This is the rectification of suffering. Emancipation from suffering. So, emancipation in terms of mental volitional activities and the consciousness is difficult to communicate. Because our thinking pattern, our education and our linear rationalization never happy with radical reflection. But if you are lucky enough to taste it, the effect, the results are electric. No time gap in between. That's why the Buddha says in the Dhamma, akaliko, whenever the understanding happens, it won't take any much time. It's like a lightning. All of a sudden it happens and disappears, and it is due to the development of the tension for a long time. So likewise, whenever the understanding, real understanding happens, you are not there, time is not there, space is not there, only the experience remains. And that experience is making the real change. So therefore, even though it is expressed, presented as a kind of nutriment, you must understand it in a way not to get committed in terms of these volitional activities, in terms of this your consciousness, because their agenda is not your well-being, so therefore you have to witness it as and when it happens. That witnessing mindfulness is not the mindfulness you gain from the observation of the in-breath and out-breath. Observation of the in-breath and out-breath is a Montessori joke. It's very preliminary, and ultimately you have to train it to the point you can be mindful even without in-breath and out-breath, even without the sign, even without an object, and that mindfulness is the only thing you can make use in order to see the intentions, in order to see the consciousness. So when and where you are to observe it, it appears like you are the patient, you are the doctor, that mindfulness is the medicine, and it is always at that level mixed up with clear comprehension, the wisdom, and that art we call vipassana, it is going against the grain. So this is an utmost necessity, the radical reflection and this quick wit. It's utmost necessity to understand Mano Sanchetana, how it becomes a nutriment, why should you wean it off? How the Vijnana become a nutriment, or how the way of meditation you are slowly, slowly weaning it off. If there is no such a method, what we always doing is fostering it, fertilizing it, feeding it. So therefore, ultimately we have to bear the cost. So therefore, let the meditation progress slowly, slowly. When you go there, and one day you will understand with your own mistakes, your own ways and means, the deep part of the teaching of the Buddha, and there you develop such a respect to the Dhamma, such a respect to the Buddha, and such a respect to your own discipline, and such a respect to your own mistakes you have done, up to that point, till then, you have an underestimation for that. So slowly, slowly, you are assuming, but the unlucky thing is, when the total, when you go to the maximum, you are no more. No one to throw a party, even at the highest achievement. But never mind, the experience is there. That is how this 2600 years we can see in the history. So it was so compassionate to give us the gist of the Dhamma. It is our duty to verify under our very nose. With that remark, I would like to sum up the today's talk. Thank you very much for listening.